Jackal had only his own conviction to scatter them. "The wizard you've been wooing did for the sludge man, not me. Save for the shackled man you had me murder, the only corpses I've made were of those trying to make corpses of us. We have less enemies because of me, less brothers because of you. I want to see this hoof survive. I think there are those at this table who want the same." The Claymaster's smile managed condescension, even beneath the wrappings.
"Let's find out if you're right about that. Boys, cast your votes."
An axe came whirling by the chief's head, close enough to disturb the wisps of hair sprouting from between his bandages, and struck the stump. Hobnail had moved so quickly, Jackal had not seen him stand, much less throw. The Claymaster did not so much as flinch. But neither did Jackal when an axe came arcing over to embed itself in the table right next to his hand. Hoodwink had made the unerring cast without even rising from his seat.
"Two against me, two for me," the Claymaster said. "And of course, I'm comfortable where I am."
The chief took up his axe in one swollen hand and lazily, effortlessly, hammered it into the wood before him, all without leaving his seat. With a display of almost laughable devotion, Polecat stood and followed the Claymaster's example. 4-2. Jackal felt pangs of doubt begin to take root in his chest. But then Oates rose.
"Sorry, chief,"
the thrice rumbled, and hurled his axe into the stump, the force of the toss opening several new splits in the old wood. From the other side of the table, a chair scraped back, and Meade stood up. His voting axe was in his hand, and Jackal could see he was holding his breath. The toss went a bit wide, coming nowhere near the Claymaster, but it struck the stump behind him nonetheless. Jackal smiled as a wild look appeared in the Claymaster's eyes. He had managed to hide any surprise he felt at Hobnail casting against him, but he clearly thought the young blood's loyalty was his. What he had not seen, what he had refused to see, was the influence of a certain member of his hoof. Ever since her hotly contested admission into the Bastards, Fetching had been maligned and discounted. Most of the brothers had come to accept her, even love her. Not the Claymaster. Never the Claymaster. Entrenched in blind ignorance, the chief treated her with open hostility when possible and dismissive scorn when she began adopting the reticence necessary while in his presence. Looking to his left, Jackal saw she wore the guise now, the taciturn Fetching that only existed in this room, a false face she had created in order to weather the Claymaster's ire. It would no longer be needed. Hers was the last vote left to be cast, and Jackal nearly screamed in triumph at the justice she had been handed. It was only right that her axe be the one to finally bring the chief down. "Bury him, Fetch," Jackal urged softly. She stood, her hand going to her axe idly, sliding it off the table edge. All eyes were on her, though she seemed unaware of the scrutiny. The axe hung in her hand, the flat of the blade flapping slightly against her thigh as she twisted her wrist in rapid motions. She seemed both lost in thought and gripped by a furious concentration. The room began to be charged with expectance. Jackal would not rush her. She deserved the moment. The Claymaster was not so gracious.
"Throw the damn axe, you gutless quim!"
Fetching's head snapped over to look at the chief, the muscles of her neck tight with fury. The breath coming from her flared nostrils was audible. Close as he was, Jackal could feel her whole body vibrating. Her aggression slipped its chains, and the axe came up over her head, hanging in the air for a heartbeat, before the striking snake of her arm brought it down. The wood resounded alarmingly beneath the steel. Jackal's horrified eyes fixed on Fetching's axe, lodged into the table.
"Hell's overburdened," someone hissed, the shock rendering the voice indiscernible.
Jackal looked up from his chair at Fetch. He did not recognize her. It wasn't Fetching. Fetching would never have betrayed him. The stranger glared down at him, her body readying itself in anticipation of reprisal. But Jackal could not stand. All he could do was gawk at the stolen face of the one who had just killed him.
"Fetching, what have you done?"
Oates's voice, perplexed and strangled.
"She's just given me the vote,"
the Claymaster said, his own tones dull with disbelief. The old villain recovered quickly.
"Jackal, your challenge has failed. 5-4. You know the code of this hoof."
Jackal did know. He was now to stand before the stump, his axe thrown back at him by the Claymaster, his fate decided by his own blade in the hands of the one he had tried to supplant. Oddly, he could detect no pleasure in the chief's pronouncement. He wanted to know why Fetch had done this, but he would not allow his last moments to be marked with mewling questions. Not daring to look at her, lest the need for revenge overtake his limbs, Jackal gained his feet. Oates was there, his bearded face seeking pardon for a treachery he had not committed. None of the other brothers would look at him.
"Wait!"
It was Grocer who spoke. His pinched face was peering at the stump.
"Claymaster does not have the vote," the old miser said.
Jackal looked. 5 axes protruded from the stump, and 5 were in the table. Where had the 5th vote come from? And then he realized.
"Warbler's vote stands," Oates proclaimed. "Hoof code." "Only if he is still alive," Polecat added.
The Claymaster looked down the table to the only other bastard still seated.
"Well, Hoodwink," the chief asked, "you still have friends amongst the free riders? What's the word on Warbler? He's still breathing?"
Hoodwink raised his hairless head.
"Yes, he is."
Oates released a relieved breath. Jackal, feeling the brink retreat, rallied. He looked at the Claymaster.
"We have a draw," he said.
It was as needless a declaration as the chief's about the challenge, but Jackal needed to hear it out loud in order to dispel the duplicity that had torn the earth from under his feet.
"Noon," the Claymaster decreed. "Inside the keep. Until then, the opposing sides are to have no contact."
Jackal agreed wordlessly, and gathered up his supporters with a sweeping look, a look that, unfathomably, excluded Fetching. Leading Oates, Mead, and Hobnail out of the voting chamber, Jackal left her behind.
"What happens now?" Mead asked, when the 4 of them reached the privacy of the yard.
"Trial by combat," Hobnail told him.
There was more air in Mead's voice than words.
"Jack is going to fight the chief?"
"How did your fool ass ever become a bastard?"
Hob berated the younger half-orc.
"Let him alone," Jackal urged soberly. "Not like any of us have ever been here before."
"It's happened in other hoofs,"
Hobnail countered without much energy.
"He should know the code."
Jackal took a step closer to the perplexed Mead. "Claymaster and I each choose a champion to fight the trial. That way the combat can't leave the hoof without any leader at all."
"This shit's to the death?"
Mead asked, looking more spooked.
"Not always," Jackal told him.
"It was the last time the fangs of our fathers chose a new chief," Hobnail declared.
Jackal gave him a sharp look. "We're not the fangs. It's a bare-knuckle fight. Surely the gray bastards can declare a victor without caving in a skull or tearing a throat out."
"So, who are you going to choose, Jackal?"
Mead asked. Jackal turned to the only one amongst them who had not spoken. Oates stood with his arms folded over his chest, his eyes burning at the sand beneath his feet. Feeling Jackal's gaze, the thrice looked up. They had known it would come to this, had planned and plotted and mused for years, the three of them. But now, only Jackal and Oates were standing here, their silence reiterating 100 private talks. Everything had changed, and yet nothing had. The possibility of a draw had always been there. Jackal would challenge, Oates would champion. He was the only thrice blood in the hoof, the biggest and strongest amongst the bastards.
"Who do you think the chief will pick?"
Oates asked, already preparing himself for the fight ahead. Hobnail barked a short laugh.
"Would have been me."
Jackal nodded slowly in agreement. Hob was the nearest to Oates in stature and brawn. Without him, the Claymaster was lacking in raw strength. But he had something else. "It will be Hood," Jackal said, looking only at Oates. His friend took this in resolutely, but there was a flicker in that familiar, bearded face. Jackal was sure he was the only one who caught it, so tiny was the reaction. He did not begrudge any trepidation. Hoodwink was not a foe to be taken lightly. Meade had blanched.
"Didn't Hood once kill an entire Ulyud when he was a free rider? 6 sticks, single-handed. I heard he wasn't even mounted."
Hobnail cuffed him hard across the back of the head.
"You see him do anything of the sort at Barayat? Or any of the other half-dozen times he's ridden to stop a raid? Would have been useful. How can you speak Tyne tongue, Meade, and muck about with that alchemist's fire in the ovens, and still be so fuck-all stupid?"
"Yeah, no, I know. But it's different when he's with us. That's why the chief sends him out alone all the time. He's got ways when no one is looking."
"Well, everyone will be looking during the trial," Jackal said, wanting to put an end to it. They had all heard the stories about Hoodwink, but anyone who survived years as a free rider built up a reputation. Amongst the nomads, there was only the dead and the famous. Sifting out the facts from the legends was pointless. What was certain was that Hood had been the chief's pet cutthroat since joining the Hoof, and there was no doubt he was dangerous. Jackal drew Oates aside. "Don't let the ghost stories get inside your head. He'll have speed and a few dirty tricks. Avoid a grapple and don't tire out. That pallid snake won't be able to take more than a few of your punches. Hells, none of us can. Pick your moment and put him down." Oates listened intently, chewing on the advice. After a moment's digestion, he clapped Jackal on the shoulder, but his confident expression withered quickly.
"Why did she do it, Jack?"
All Jackal had for an answer was painful earnestness.
"I don't know. We'll ask her once we are on the other side of this. Thank you for standing with me."
Oates's powerful fingers clenched down.
"Just a little ways to ride, brother. The hogs smell water."
Noon came. The interior of the central keep was sweltering. It was always hot within, but Jackal felt as if he were trying to draw breath at the bottom of a boiling sea. This amount of heat could only mean one thing. The Claymaster had ordered the ovens lit.
"Why would he waste the timber?" Meade asked, with no small amount of wounded pride.
The ovens had been his charge for the last year. "A precaution," Jackal lied. "Help keep the fortress safe while we are distracted with the trial." The true reason was more sinister. Fighting in this blistering air would be terrible. The chief was trying to give Hoodwink some kind of advantage. Was the gaunt-faced mongrel immune to heat? Jackal kept his suspicions behind his teeth. There was no need to burden Oates with unknown worries regarding the queer talents of his adversary. The brute walked at Jackal's right, already stripped to the waist. Oates looked prepared, formidable. He had even snatched some sleep in the intervening hours. As Jackal's group entered the great chamber, he saw no sign of any slopheads. What was about to happen here was for only the Brotherhood to witness. The Claymaster and his entourage were already present. There was no cordoned-off arena, just a broad section of open ground beneath the great chimney. The two factions faced each other across the innocuous expanse of dirt.
"Your champion ready?"
the Claymaster inquired. Oates answered for himself, taking a full step forward and rolling his trunk neck around atop his corded shoulders. His attention was on Hoodwink, who seemed shrunken and sickly by comparison, lurking at the edge of the chief's cadre. Jackal tried to read that sunken visage, but came away, as always, mystified.
"No weapons," the Claymaster announced, sounding almost bored. "No yields. A champion is only defeated if knocked senseless or killed. Understood? Then let's get this done."
The chief gave a quick, ushering wave, but Hoodwink did not move. It was Fetching who stepped onto the fighting ground. Jackal's throat constricted. He had been avoiding looking at her and had not noticed the change in her attire. Her riding leathers were replaced by loose linen breeches, cropped above the knee, her breasts wrapped tightly in the same material. A glistening film of pig lard shone on her exposed skin and through her bound hair. The set of her head, the way she bounced slightly on the balls of her bare feet, the faraway brush fire in her eyes, it all bespoke a Fetching ready to fight. Oates had tensed when he first saw her, but now he took a furious step forward.
"Fetch? What the fuck game is this?"
She stepped lightly away from the bellowing thrice, her fists coming up in relaxed defense. Oates's hands remained by his side, fingers splayed in pleading confusion. Just as suddenly as he had surged forward, Oates whirled and hurried away from her, his eyes agog with pained panic, his head shaking with disbelief.
"Jackal!"
Jackal caught his friend's face in his hands, feeling the fear-tight jaw beneath the beard.
"What? What?" Oates stammered. "What is she? I can't—"
"Listen," Jackal tried to shake some focus into the near-crazed mask.
"Listen!"
Oates's eyes settled on him, barely. Jackal lowered his voice to a near whisper.
"I don't know why, but it's here. You're letting her rattle you, and that's what they want. They got no one who can beat you, so they're resorting to this. You can't allow this to change anything."
"I can't hurt her, Jack."
"Then put me in," Hobnail said from behind Jackal. "I'll put the rabid cunt down."
Oates lunged. Jackal managed to stall the brute's charge, but it was the derisive laughter from the Claymaster's camp that actually stopped him. Throwing a warning look back at Hobnail, Jackal returned his attention to Oates.
"I don't want her hurt either," he assured, and was surprised to find he meant it.
"But she put herself here. She put us here."
"Oates, she's trying to get me killed."
This last seemed to waken his friend, the truth of the words effective as a bucket of cold water. He calmed slightly, though Jackal could feel every muscle trembling, shivering from the frigid realization.
"I won't let that happen," Oates vowed.
Releasing his breath gratefully, Jackal lowered Oates's head down with his hands until their brows were touching.
"She's going to be fast. Remember, don't tire out. Let her temper get the best of her and snuff her candle. When she comes to, we will both get answers."
Oates nodded, his forehead scraping against Jackal's. Then he stepped away. Fetch was waiting on him in the center of the trial ground. These two had faced each other many times in training. Sword drills, grappling matches, half-lark fist fights. Black eyes and busted lips had been traded between them since barrels. Yet seeing them now, Oates's slab-thewed back drawing closer to Fetch's springy stance, Jackal found a souring dread in his belly. Hobnail was already barking encouragement, and on the other side, Polecat and Grocer urged Fetching on with zeal. Jackal had no voice. He barely dared breathe. Oates advanced on Fetch, implacable as a mudslide. He was a good head taller and had the reach, but he kept his hands hovering beneath his chin well after he had closed the distance. Fetch slid to the right, tracing an agile semicircle to keep from being bowled over. Twice, Jackal saw her left toes rise slightly off the dirt, but she held the kicks back. They were both showing restraint, caution, using their heads instead of their bodies. Oates kept on pressing, forcing Fetch to keep scampering, tempting her to react. Smart. Eventually, she would get fed up with the rabbit game, and her anger would surface. Then she would do something stupid. Jackal stared hard at her feet, willing her to lash out. Fresh as Oates was, he would catch the leg easily and end this trial quickly. But Fetch was smart, too. She moved with that natural, effortless grace that had been hers since adolescence. She used twice as much motion, but appeared to make Oates work twice as hard. Sweat was already dripping from his beard.
"Smash that cricket, Oates!"
Hobnail yelled, forcing Jackal to reach over and silence him with a touch. That kind of talk was going to goad Oates into a mistake. The brute ceased his advance and began merely pivoting to keep Fetch in view. She hovered dangerously close, well within the crushing purview of Oates's fist. Jackal saw her toes come up again. Oates did, too. And that's why he missed the jab that Fetch sent darting into his face. She barely had the reach, and her knuckles glanced off his cheekbone, but the punch was just as much a feint as the raised foot. Ducking under the hook Oates used to counter, the hook she must have expected, Fetching slammed a pair of quick strikes into his midsection and was away again. Oates wasn't hurt, Jackal was relieved to see, but Fetch had touched him 3 times without coming close to reprisal, and that fact was creased on the thrice's concerned face. Still, she could needle all day and not bring that tree down, while all Oates needed was 1 solid hit.
"Wait for it, brother!"
Jackal reminded his champion. The tilt of Oates's head showed he had heard and understood. He waded back toward Fetching, hunched lower, his head and face more within reach, yet bulwarked behind his rippling forearms. He was a moving wall of bunched muscle, prepared to bring all his power down on a single mistake from his opponent, a mistake he now courted. This time he sent fast, compact jabs at Fetch, his big fists scattering her fluidity. She dodged and weaved, but there was an ugly, fitful quality to the motions. One jab nearly caught her, and she was forced to buffet it aside with her own hand, upsetting her balance. Smelling the opening, Oates barreled through, bringing a tight elbow around to hammer Fetch's shoulder, then made a grab for her. For half a heartbeat, he had her bound up, but his hand slid against the lard as Fetch contorted free, managing not only to break the grapple, but also land a departing strike to Oates's jaw with the heel of her hand. Hells, she had moved so fast, Jackal was not sure how she had managed it. Oates expelled a wad of blood, along with a curse. Thankfully, he refused to get angry. Pressing the back of his hand gingerly against his teeth, Oates paused. Fetching had retreated several arm's lengths, and he watched her intently. Waiting, catching his breath, cooling off. "That's the way," Jackal hissed to himself, biting the inside of his mouth to keep from smirking. Oates was refusing the offensive. If Fetch wanted to come to grips, she would have to come to him. Every moment she delayed was another moment Oates gathered himself. He need not chase her all around the fight ground when he could simply wait for her to try to tackle the mountain.
"What's wrong, honey clit?" Hobnail jeered. "You only know how to run one way?"
Jackal saw Fetch's jaw clench, the pride boiling into something dangerous. Dangerous and reckless. "You were never fit to be here." The words were forming on Jackal's tongue, but they died before he could voice them. he could not wield such a lie, even in service of his cause. Still, he made no effort to silence Hobnail.
"Come on, you useless gash! Stop stalling, and fight like a bastard!"
A silent snarl twisted across Fetching's mouth, baring her teeth. She advanced on Oates, but it wasn't the headlong, foolhardy rush Jackal had hoped for. No, it was a straight-backed, purposeful stride. Halfway, her fists came up, locking calmly just below the eyes that were limned in chilling intent. Her first jab, swift as a striking snake, was met by an almost lazy swat from Oates. He caught the follow-up cross against his bunched arm, which he then sent out in a wind-punishing punch meant for Fetch's face. Snapping away, she came right back, her hip twisting as she launched a kick. Her long, powerful leg careened into Oates's side, and Jackal just barely heard a grunt over the impact. Oates made a grab for the leg, but it had already recoiled, returning to place beneath its fast master to further fuel her assault. The pair began to weave a storm of violence between them. Oates sent thick-armed blows revolving away from his savage torso, each an unfulfilled promise of a snapped bone. Fetching dodged and countered, her limbs a nest of pit vipers. The dull slapping of meat accompanied their breathy expulsions of fury. Oates blocked more than he avoided, weathering the knees and elbows of his swift opponent. He was able to send counterblows less and less as Fetch's attacks reached a fever pitch. Bright droplets of sweat were spinning off of both champions, but Oates was clearly flagging more beneath the palpable heat. A trio of punches made it past his guard, the first carving a path for the next two, and Oates's head rocked to one side and back again, blood now flying next to the sweat. A bestial growl tore from his throat, and, abandoning all attempts at protection, the thrice lunged forward, driving his knee directly into Fetching's midsection. She folded up as she was lifted off her feet and pushed backward, a choking rush of air coming from between her lips. Jackal shivered. Every blow to this point was nothing that would not have happened in the training yard, but the sheer brutality of the strike Oates had just delivered seemed to stop time. A threshold had just been crossed. Somewhere within a muffled void, Hobnail was crowing. Ropey spit cascaded from Fetch's pain-gaped mouth, but somehow she kept her feet when they again struck dirt. Unhappy with the result, Oates kept coming. He bowled into Fetching, scooping her nearly bent double form in his arms to haul her into the air, flipping her into a head-dangling bear hug. Using the momentum of his charge along with prodigious strength, Oates prepared to toss his inverted foe over his shoulder. From both sides, cries of alarm issued from the spectators as Fetching hooked her legs around Oates's neck and used that same momentum to sit upright. She was now astride his shoulders, his face buried in her stomach, and she began raining elbow strikes down upon his bald pate. Blocked by the clinging body of his attacker, Oates could not properly bring his own arms up to defend himself. Flailing ineffectually as Fetching smote his skull, the brute finally halted and began twisting his body in an attempt to dislodge her. Having witnessed Fetch break many a hog to the saddle, Jackal knew Oates's attempts were useless.
"Bring her to the ground!"
he yelled, hoping to be heard through Fetch's gripping thighs. His voice, or instinct, must have gotten through, for Oates grabbed hold of Fetch's legs and threw his weight forward, slamming her shoulder blades into the ground. The maneuver had forced Oates to one knee, and he tried to rise, but through the upset dust, Jackal could see that Fetching held fast, now straightening her spine to hold her opponent to the earth. But Oates's arms were still free, and he punched viciously into Fetch's kidneys, once, twice, and she let go, throwing her legs over her head into a back tumble to regain her feet. Oates shot forward from his crouch and weathered a cross kick to the face in order to close the distance. His charge now a stumble, he swept his arm at Fetch's weight-bearing ankle and knocked her to the ground beside him. She rolled and planted an elbow in his ribs, trying to stand, but he caught her. The lard on her skin now infused with grit from the floor, was useless. Oates had her seized by the neck and one wrist. He pulled her up and around until they were both on their knees, facing each other. Fetch's free hand struck defiantly across Oates's jaw, but he dissuaded a second blow by hammering his forehead into her face. Jackal winced and muttered a curse when Oates did it again. Fetching was bloodied now, her eyes rolling about, unfocused. Oates let her go and stood. He loomed over her a little unsteadily, his fist balling up. Unable to stare directly at what was coming, Jackal looked around. Meade had his eyes completely averted. Hob was leaning forward, eager for the final blow. Across the way, the Claymaster's bandaged, shadowed face looked firmly upon the impending end of his reign. Oates hesitated for just a moment, then drove his fist down. Jackal narrowed his eyelids against the impact, and immediately snapped them open. Fetch had not fallen. Her entire body had reeled beneath the resounding blow, but she caught herself, the knuckles of one hand dug into the dirt. For what seemed an eternity, she remained there, motionless, save for the heave of her ribcage, as she sucked air through a mouth pouring blood. Jackal could not say whether Oates had pulled his punch or Fetch had borne the best he could give. Either thought was a heartbreak. Craning around, Oates looked at Jackal, his bruised face riddled with conflict. All Jackal could do was nod. Again. "Hell's Fetch, are you going to make him kill you?" Oates clenched his eyes against the scourge of his task and turned back, raising his arm once more. He swung, and Fetching erupted off the ground. Her powerful legs drove her upward, and she caught Oates's entire arm, binding it in a locked hold. Before he could react, she sprang again, twisting herself around in the air to hook the back of one knee behind Oates's head, the other looping under his armpit. Using his arm as leverage, she threw him to the ground, head over heels. His arm still locked in her grasp, and her leg now across his throat, Fetching straightened with every muscle in her powerful body. Jackal heard Oates begin to gasp, then choke. He tried to hit her with his free arm, but there was no force to be had. The bulging muscles of the thrice's torso bunched, working against the downward pressure. Inch by inch he began to rise, but inch by inch he strangled. Spit shot from between his clenched teeth, as Fetch grit hers and held firm. Jackal stood transfixed as the frightening wills of his two most loved friends ground themselves to dust against each other. Oates's strength was monstrous. He labored with empty lungs and still managed to rise, torturously. Fetching punished him every bit of the way, her ability to constrain him a nearly unbelievable feat. Were he not seeing it now, Jackal would never have thought it possible. With nothing else to be done, he watched the nightmare. Oates was nearly upright. Fetching turned nearly sideways to maintain control. Suddenly, she released him and rolled to her feet. With ragged breaths, Oates managed to make it to his knees, but that was as far as he could go. He slumped back, sitting on his heels to weave drunkenly, his face seeming to search the far-removed ceiling of the chamber. Fetch paced before him, watching him. After a moment, she hopped forward and sent a knee flying into the side of Oates's skull, just above the ear. Jackal felt his guts curdle at the sound. The only thing more painful than that sound was the sight of Fetch catching Oates as he fell and lowering his head gently to the ground. Chapter 19. Jackal stood before the stump. The hafts of the axes that supported his challenge stuck out around him, comfortless as an embrace from a corpse. For all the long hours Jackal had spent in the voting chamber, He had never seen it from this vantage. The head of the coffin-shaped table was within spitting distance, stretching out away from him as it narrowed toward the doors. The back of the chief's chair was within a single, mocking stride, yet forever unreachable. The gray bastards were standing behind their chairs. Each tried to remain stone, but Jackal saw oily films of emotion playing upon the surface of the familiar faces. Sorrow, shame, disappointment, wrath, pity. That last was the worst, but thankfully, Jackal saw no pleasure. None were leering in anticipation of his end. Even the Claymaster, standing at the far end of the table with the doors at his back, was dour. Generously, he had allowed Jackal to stall this moment until it was certain Oates would not be following him in death. The care of injuries usually fell to Grocer, but Jackal had insisted that Crafty tend to Oates as well. They brought him into the Claymaster's domicile and stayed closeted away for hours, hours that Jackal spent in the yard mere paces from the door. No guard was placed upon him. His hoof knew he would not run and dishonor himself. Besides, his worry for Oates was enough to shackle him to the fortress. The Claymaster came and went several times, always bypassing Jackal without a word. Of fetching there was no sign. Jackal kept dreading and wishing for her to appear, fearing what he might see, what he might do. But she never came. Even after Grocer emerged to tell Jackal that Oates would recover, and then left to inform the rest of the hoof, she never came. She was present now, though, in the voting chamber, waiting with all the other riders to watch the execution of one of their own. Jackal stared hard at her, desperate to glean some answer before his vision darkened forever. But her swollen face, mottled with bruises, displayed nothing but a guttering anxiousness, as if she wanted the impending deed done and over with. Jackal did not share her impatience. He did not want to die, leastways not like this. He kept yearning for the weight of a tulwar in his hand, so that he could unleash himself upon the room, try to cut fetching down, the Claymaster, any who stood in his way. Part of him hoped they would all try to stop him, even Hob and Mead, who had tried to help him. Would he have felt such undiscerning hatred if Oates had been in the room? Would his instinct to fight for his life have made an enemy of the one who had given the most in his bid for power? Jackal hoped not, and was grateful he would never know. Oates was laid up, his injuries rendering him unaware of what took place here. Jackal was glad his friend would be spared the display. His bearded face would undoubtedly have been a comfort, but a selfish one. In truth, Jackal did not want any in this room to be the last thing he saw. He would rather have gazed upon the sun-drenched freedom of the lots. But he stood firm in this dark, remorseless chamber and waited. An icy twinge slithered through him as the Claymaster began to approach. This would be the last thing he saw, the hunched, diseased form of the old man he had failed to bring down. It was woefully fitting. The chief came around the table and wedged himself between Jackal and the back of his retained seat. He leaned forward and reached an arm out to grasp the haft of Jackal's axe, now lodged just above his left shoulder. This close, the Claymaster reeked of stale sweat, damp bandages, and dried pus. Jackal's nose crinkled against the odors. Through the haphazard mask of wrappings, the chief's rheumy eyes crawled across Jackal's face. Despite his twisted back, the poxy mongrel was still equal in height. In his prime, he must have been a monster. He stood there for a long spell, his hand resting on the axe handle, not yet removing it from the stump. When he spoke, his voice was low. His words meant only for the one he was about to
kill.
You always were too damn ambitious, boy. Never did understand your place.
I'm in the place you always wanted me, Jackal returned. The Claymaster grinned.
You're just going to keep thinking you are always right. Right to the end.
Clearly I was wrong about some things. Someone.
I almost wish you had succeeded. I would have got to sit back and watch you break under the weight of being chief. The weight of discovering you don't have all the answers.
Oates and I would have figured it out. All of it. The Claymaster's face fell slightly.
Well, we will never know now.
Don't seek revenge against him, Jackal said, not allowing the words to sound like a threat or a plea, just a last request.
Jackal, the chief said, with you gone, Oates is going to flourish in this hoof.
And then Jackal saw it, something he had missed for years, but was now made obvious by the closeness of his rival. Not even the stained linen wrappings could hide the hope Jackal saw in the Claymaster's face. You want him to lead after you, he said.
The fix respect power, the Claymaster said. A thrice blood at the head of our table proves we have it. You're clever enough, Jackal, and you make the women wet. But our enemies ain't whores and wet nurses. They're orcs. You are not the leader the gray bastards need. Never have been. Never will be.
Impotent fury frayed Jackal's patience, and he leaned into the chief's face.
Then fucking pull that axe free and be rid of me!
The Claymaster matched his aggressive motion, causing Jackal's nose to brush against the loathsome bandages. The chief's voice rose, now able to be heard by all in the room.
I pull this axe free, and you are dead, boy. Don't trust in some vain hope that this pustule-ridden carcass of mine is not up to the task of sending you to all the hells. I will bury this hatchet in your fucking heart, if that is what you choose.
The Claymaster let the words hang there a moment. Choose. Confusion curdled Jackal's anger. The chief took a slow breath and withdrew a bit before continuing, his voice calmer, yet still pitched for the hoof to hear.
I will give you a choice. A chance. Turn free rider, and you can live.
The energy in the room changed. Beyond the Claymaster, Jackal could sense his brethren silently react to this sudden offer of mercy. There were several perplexed glances exchanged. Fetching remained carefully motionless. Jackal was equally surprised, and he stood transfixed, trying to reason out why the chief would allow him to live. Then he had it. Killing him would only push Oates further away, lengthen the time it would take for the Claymaster to bring him to his side. Since childhood, Jackal had held sway over Oates, sway the chief coveted. That was the reason he had scorned Jackal all these years, jealous of the influence over the one he had earmarked to be his successor. Too late. It was all so damn clear. Well, Jackal wasn't about to help the Claymaster coax Oates into being his puppet. Jackal lifted his chin and spoke so all in the room could hear. I am not some nomad, he said. I will die as I am, a gray bastard. Grocer, Polecat, and Hobnail nodded with approval. Mead's eyes brimmed with a mixture of horror and worship. Fetch's eyes were closed, her chin fallen. The Claymaster leaned in once more, his voice again dropping to a conspiratorial whisper.
You better think hard on that decision, boy,
and fast.
Oates may one day be chief, Jackal hissed back, but it will be because he wants to grind you beneath his heel, to avenge himself on you for killing his friend, not because you tempted him like a dog with promises of more meat.
Very well, the Claymaster said, his smile turning malicious. You won't do it for yourself. But what about the Tyne girl? What do you think happens to her when you're dead? Go nomad, and you have my word you can take her with you. Ride where you will. Stand here all prideful and die, and I swear on every god who craves bloodshed that I will turn that elf Quim over to Polecat.
Seeing Jackal's reaction, the Claymaster's smile deepened, revealing yellowed teeth.
You know what the Rudders were before the war, don't you, Jackal? They were bed slaves, mongrel stallions used to sate the twisted tastes of his Sparta's nobles. And not just the women. Polecat's a little young to remember that, but the Rudder's legacy has always attracted degenerates. He'll use her in ways an orc couldn't stomach, and make whatever the sludge man did to her seem like a father's tender kisses. I wager he even lets the rest of us watch. Share the entertainment.
Jackal was unrestrained. No chains or ropes bound him to the stump. He could easily pull an axe and split the chief's face. His palms burned with the desire. Hells, he could reach out and throttle him, snap his blistered neck before the others could even move. He didn't have enough friends in the room to survive the act. Not even Hobnail would back such a murder. It went against the code. And Jackal would destroy the bastards if he slew the chief now. There was none strong enough to lead them out of the chaos that would follow, not with Oates lying up with a cracked skull. Jackal did not want his name to be remembered as the failed challenger who treacherously murdered his chief and brought about the fall of the Grey Bastards. More than that, he could not abandon Starling. He could die to spite the chief's plans, or live, free to ride, with her safety in his hands. There really was no choice. "Give me the elf," Jackal said. "And I will go." The Claymaster rolled his head backward slightly.
"Tell them."
Jackal looked past the chief at the hoof and found his throat suddenly dry. The words needed to be said, but it was possible they would choke him for the betrayal. Swallowing hard, Jackal raised his voice. "On the honored condition that I be allowed to leave with the Tyne, Starling, I declare myself a free rider and renounce this hoof. I vow never again to set foot upon this lot on penalty of death. From this moment, I am no longer a Grey Bastard." The faces of his now former brethren turned truly to stone.
"Your hog and your kit are yours to take," the Claymaster proclaimed, "and the elf too. You have until dawn. If you remain on bastard lands after that, you will be hunted down. Riders, retrieve your axes and mark this deserter."
One by one, the Grey Bastards approached the stump and wrenched their axes from the wood. They then took the blade and ran it across Jackal's skin, drawing ragged cuts across his tattoos. The pain of the sharp steel was nothing compared to the numb despair of a life erased. He had ridden with those who now cut him, ate with them, trained with them, fought with them. Some were friends and some foes, but they were all family, loved and despised in unsteady measures over years of shared turmoil and celebrated victories. From his own mouth he had severed the kinship, and now they came willingly to wound him, an oath of what they would do should he ever return. Gritting his teeth against the bite of the blades, Jackal waited for it to end. When fetching came, Jackal was already bleeding from cuts on both shoulders, both arms, and his chest. Her eyes searched for a place to mark him, and he saw hesitance shining through the flinty orbs. Jackal turned around and presented the tattoos upon his back, the proper place for her blade. When it was all over, Jackal strode from the voting chamber for the last time, his body weeping crimson. Outside, dusk had abdicated to darkness. The slopheads waiting in the yard stepped away from him when they saw the bleeding cuts reflected wetly in the moonlight. They knew what the gashes signified. None of the hopefuls would help him now. He needed his wounds dressed, but he did not want to distract Crafty away from Oates. There was only one place he could go. Beryl's face melted and set, quick as candle wax, when she saw him. The Claymaster had not yet given the winsome villagers permission to return home, so she and her orphans still lodged in the Slophead barracks. Jackal tarried by the door as she approached.
"Nomad?"
Beryl said, a hitch in her voice. She was relieved, but surprised. Her eyes wandered over his injuries and mourned.
"The children shouldn't see you like this."
"Could you help me with the cuts?" Jackal ventured. "The Claymaster may take issue."
"Fuck the Claymaster. I'll gather some things and meet you in your chamber."
Nodding gratefully, Jackal left. The bunkhouse already felt foreign. As he stepped over the threshold, Jackal was seized by the same sense of trepidation he once felt as a slophead when it was his duty to clean the bastard's quarters. He was an intruder once more. Moving quickly down the hall, Jackal entered the expiring solace of his room. There would be no time to sleep. The nearest border to the bastard's lot was a ride of several hours. By the time his wounds were dressed, hearth readied, and his gear collected, Jackal would be in a pressing need to leave. Plus, there was Starling to consider. With any luck, she would go as docilely with him as she had done with Hoodwink. Resistance would only cause delay, and delay could get them both killed. Beryl arrived, bearing a lit lamp and a laden sling bag. She came wordlessly into the room and sat next to him on the bed. He waited while she scrutinized his cuts by the light of the flame.
"None of them are too deep," she said softly. "Your brothers were kind to you. This one across your back won't even need a bandage."
Jackal laughed involuntarily, but bit it down when he heard the sob in his throat. Beryl began to clean his cuts, the wine-soaked rag more agonizing than the axe blades. Setting his jaw, Jackal sat slumped and staring. "I'm sorry about Oates," he managed after a time.
"Slops say he is going to heal,"
Beryl replied. He could hear the chained anger in her voice, and knew she held it back for his sake. How far had he fallen? What kind of pathetic thing had he become that he was spared the rancor he deserved from a woman who had never feared to scold him? It would have been better if Beryl had berated him, called him a fool, screamed all the truths of his folly. But he was beneath contempt now, just a shadow that would be gone with the sun. It was madness to scream at shadows. "The Claymaster wants Oates to be chief," Jackal said, not entirely certain why.
"He will never take that seat, Jackal."
"He should. Tell him, from me, he should. And tell him not to seek revenge on Fetching, not when he wakes up, and not once he sits at the head of the table." Beryl's weary disapproval ran through her entire body.
"Jackal, Jackal, you've always been blind when it comes to that one. How long are you going to protect her?"
"No," Jackal protested. "It isn't that. Oates should never trust her again, but he shouldn't go after her either.
If he does, the Claymaster gets everything he's ever wanted. Me and Fetch gone, and Oates under his wing. She took a side. That was her right as a gray bastard. We, Oates and I, helped her get a place in this hoof, but her vote is her own. If Oates treats her with scorn once he's chief, then he is no better than the Claymaster, and he has to be better, Beryl. He has to be better. There was silence for a long time, while Beryl dressed his wounds and pretended not to see his tears.
"Where will you go?"
she asked, once the last bandage was tightened. "I don't know," he admitted. "Never thought I would turn nomad. In my mind, this plan was always victory or death. Even if I had pondered life as a free rider, I never would have imagined a pregnant woman I can't talk to sharing my saddle."
"You are going to be hard-pressed to keep you both alive out there, Jackal."
He could only nod shallowly. Beryl leaned over and, grabbing his face, kissed him hard on the temple. She stood abruptly and went for the door, taking her lamp, but leaving the bag.
"Change your dressings daily," she instructed, her voice thickening. "Get the time to help you."
She was fleeing the pain of parting, and Jackal did not hinder her. "Tell your son I'm sorry." Beryl made a pained noise of promise and was gone. He sat there for a long time, knowing he should be preparing his departure, yet unable to move. Familiar sounds in the hall signaled the return of some of his hoofmates. Former hoofmates. Jackal knew who they were from the distinctive footfalls and the doors that closed along the hall. Hobnail. Polecat. Fetching. Jackal tensed when he heard her door, directly across from his, open and close. He sat in the dark, shivering with rage and no small amount of fear, a feeling so foreign, so unwelcome, that it only infuriated him further. For what seemed an eternity, he wrestled against a thousand impulses, each defying sound judgment. Only when his body had ceased trembling did he stand, and, decision made, take up his dagger. Once in the corridor, he paused, seeing the door opposite was cracked. No light flickered, but Jackal knew Fetch, knew she would still be awake. Numbly, he pushed the door open. She sat cross-legged on her bed. Boots, brigand, and riding leathers were thrown carelessly on the floor, leaving her clothed in nothing but a shirt and shadows. She looked up, but said nothing. Jackal came fully into the room and closed the door without taking his eyes off her.
"I figured you'd bring a thrum," Fetching declared before he could say anything. "It's quicker. A dagger allows for a struggle. Takes time."
Oddly, she had no weapons of her own close at hand, just a slack wineskin. "I did not come here to kill you," Jackal told her. To prove his words, he stabbed the dagger into the door jamb and left it lodged there. "Why, Fetch?"
She shook her head slowly, the motion causing her face to play in and out of the shadows. "That's a question I asked you often. Why? Why did you claim to kill Garcia? Why do you insist on protecting that Tyne? Why did you trust that fucking wizard?"
Fetch's voice became softer with each question, but the anger grew, making quivering whispers of her last words. "Why did I trust you?" Jackal growled. Fetch's head twitched to look at him.
"Did you? Because I recall you only worrying I would ruin your picky little plans. I couldn't squat to piss without you keeping one eye on me. I've been trying to keep you alive, to get the Claymaster out of his seat and stop him from handing you to Bermudo with a fucking apple in your mouth and a smile on his face. With Starling..." Fetch scoffed. "All you've done with that point ear is brought the Tynes to our door. She didn't help us one damn cunt hair, and you know it!"
The desperation in her voice surprised Jackal, and angered Fetching. She shot up, standing upon her bed for a moment, before hopping down, every motion aggravated.